You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
It is Family Matters time, and we've got a fascinating topic for you this rest of this hour. I hope you're going to call in. Questions, reflections on yourself. Hayden Nibbs is back with us, clinical psychologist. How's it, Hayden? Haven't seen you in a couple of weeks.
Yes,
lovely to see you again.
Good to be back.
Why do you look different to me? Is it just because I'm in different studios? Is it the glasses?
I shaved my beard.
That's okay, something's going on here. Spot the difference.
Indeed.
Now, we're talking about something fascinating today. Why don't you frame it for the listeners?
We're going to talk about lying today already. Let me rather say deception and the function of deception.
Now, I love this kind of topic, as you might have guessed. It was one of the first one you had proposed out of your list that I said, yes, go for the one right at the top.
Yes.
And the reason I tell you why I like it, and then it's over to you from a psychological dimension. Yeah. I just like it from an ethical dimension, but we're not going to talk much ethics today. But also from the point of view of how people behave and live. Truth, when we don't think about truth, we often think that truth is the most preeminent value in human relationships. But sometimes truth can also have consequences that are horrible. Small little examples, you know, it might be like, do I look good in this new dress, Hayden? Oh, it makes you look fatter, darling. I don't know if I want that kind of truth. So
indeed.
I think there's some beautiful complexity here about the notion of truth. So I'm very keen to what you have to say as a psychologist, because very often our unreflective assumption in this kind of conversation about deceit or outright lying is that the truth will always set you free. But truth can sometimes have all sorts of consequences. So where does that leave us in relation to deceit?
This is such a
discuss 50 marks.
Indeed. Such a difficult one to put forward clinically speaking, because there is two sides of the coin. Let's start there. The one is the impact of deceit.
Sure.
So what happens on the receiving end? There you've got, to my mind, the punctuation of truth. And there I go with what you're saying. Now I'm wearing a dress and I look terrible in it and somebody tells me I do and I get really hurt. In that sense, the temptation is there to deceive. But on the level of the impact there, psychologically speaking, if one receives dishonest messages continuously are believed, then we have actually a skewed in reality testing, which is remarkably damaging on the receiving end. Actually, psychologically speaking, it is healthier to always receive accurate feedback about the environment, even if the feedback is painful. That being said, there is depth normally that people are unable to communicate. For example, let us say partner A is wearing a dress and says, what do I look in this dress? And they do, in fact, the dress does not look good on them to the partner B's opinion. If essentially partner A is actually looking for some sort of reassurance, if partner B were to put forward a communication exploring that reassurance, and give the reassurance on the levels that it really lies, not necessarily on the opinion or of the look, we will have almost a true picture of reality coming forward in that way. But because we respond very superficially to the communication at face value, there the temptation to skew the reality comes in, thinking that we will spare our partner or spare something.
Okay, so I'm jumping the gun here by talking about exceptions where white lies, for example, which are not the same as big lies, can actually have a really good utilitarian effect in someone's life or in the relationship, right? Mm. So I think we better talk about the worst case scenario. So let me get it straight. If I hear you correctly, one of the reasons why deception in general is not a good idea is that we don't want skewed feedback about reality, because that makes it harder for us to make informed decisions about everything in our lives, right? So that's the one. Can we also, you can say whatever you want to add there. Mm. I would imagine another obvious drawback, but we need to underscore it and tease it out for me, is also that trust is an important part of relationships, and with deception comes an erosion of trust.
Absolutely. Look, the first part, I 100% agree with you. It is actually even bigger than that. Very difficult to describe it now because it requires an entire view of how humans functioning to understand the depth of damage, what the depth of damage is done if an individual's reality is skewed. But let us move a bit away from that. If we look at just on the level of interaction and a relationship, absolutely, trust is can be a cornerstone. In fact, if we look at the way people interact, deception is close to the highest punished thing we do in interaction. We struggle to forgive deception. In some instances, we forgive murder before we forgive deception. It has such a profoundly aggravating impact on the receiving end. It's quite something, the mechanism that happens.
That is so fascinating. Mm. And I'm not trying to think about it in real time. Give us a call. Have you been profoundly deceived in a massive way, lied to by a friend, a colleague, a loved one, a lover? How did you respond to it? What did it do to your relationship? What feelings came up for you when you realized you had been deceived? And equally, have you ever deceived people in your life, in small or in big ways? And maybe you're going through that now and you're not sure how to come clean. You're not sure how to puzzle through the psychology of your own deceitful behavior. And let's see whether our clinical psychologist might be able to help you out. 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg, Cape Townians. You can call us on 021-446-0567. And as with our last hour conversation around racism and bigotry, I don't believe any of us are unscathed. I have a sort of pop anthropology interest in deceit because I think we all engage in it. It's like gossip or small talk. It's just part of human life, but it can sometimes be very costly for yourself and for other parties. So share your experiences, share the emotions you've been going through, share the difficulty you have in puzzling through it, and we're going to see whether Hayden's going to be able to help you out. Now, I was thinking here, Hayden, as you are explaining the effects that this can have on people's relationships, so much so that we can be more grieved about deceit than maybe even murder.
Mm.
I think one of the reasons, and in philosophy, Immanuel Kant, he gives a very good explanation of why lying is always a bad idea. Now, I don't think it's always a bad idea, but I do like the way his logic works, okay. And it dovetails with what you're saying.
Lovely.
And it's very simple.
Yeah.
The very simple radio version is, when I deceive you, when I lie to you, then I am not respecting your autonomy because I do not give you an opportunity to hear the truth and to decide for yourself what to do with the truth. In other words, I'm undermining your agency.
Beautiful.
Because I'm effectively making a decision on your behalf.
Yeah.
Whereas the highest level of mutual respect, deep sense of respect between two people, is to tell you the full truth. And you can decide how to incorporate that into your reasoning processes.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Lovely, lovely.
And that seems to make sense. So when you talk about being aggrieved, I'm thinking to myself, stuff like that must be going on in my head, my sense of being deeply, deeply injured by your deceit.
Yes. Deceit can be exceptionally injuring in that way. It runs so deep because most of the exercises of determining the damage of it are intellectual, but it really has an emotional scar. I do, but it'll take 3-4 hours for me to give you a frame of reference to understand the damage that it can create. But the skewing of an individual's reality is literally the most profound damage you can do to a human being. In fact, if we source down elements of pathology, it will come from this skew view on reality. It is honestly...
So why do we do it? Why do we...
This is where it becomes interesting. If we look at the other side of the coin, because here we can accept that the damage is that, but that is not what occurs in deceit. And for those potentially clinicians out there listening to this, I would like to openly separate manipulation from deceit. They are very interrelated and intertwined, but manipulation I will rather define essentially as an active attempt to alter the emotional experience of the receiving end. So there it is an outward focus to change your opinion for argument's sake. Deceit is more of an inward focus. There's an attempt to put forward misinformation to the world so that it is believed. Here we have where the function of deceit comes in and how we actually play with it. I will say there's two broad types, if I can say, of deceit, but both have the same golden thread. The function of deceit is to avoid anxiety. We try to avoid fear or worry of something, some degree of anxiety. The irony in deceit is classically, once we have told a lie, we create anxiety. And we sit there worried. Indeed.
That's okay. But the intention is to what?
Yes.
To reduce anxiety or to not even experience anxiety.
That is exactly it. It is very ineffective in that sense because it is not. Because of that, for interest's sake, and this is definitely not what I want to get it going, because I don't want people out there to follow it, but our detection of deception follows that train. But we're not going to detection. But if we look, okay. if we look at that, so now we're trying to avoid anxiety when we deceive. But let us look. There's broadly speaking two general umbrellas that they can fall under. I will say the first is to avoid perceived unwanted consequences. Under this umbrella, you get your traditional things: somebody on trial for theft or whatever doesn't want the consequences, will lie, so on and so forth. We also get things that often are categorized as white lies. Let us say you hear information about a friend, you're aware it will hurt your friend. It's got nothing to do with you, but you've heard it.
Yeah.
And they ask, oh, what did you hear? And you, no, nothing. Because the consequence you don't want is hurt. So there we avoid the consequence.
That makes sense.
Because but if you look at the anxiety, you're a little bit worried. Oh, gosh, I think they're going to, let me lie. But now, once you've said it, you sit, what if they find out one day? What happened? Ah, there's the anxiety.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Makes complete sense. Leshlogo Nolo, good morning to you and welcome to the show.
Yes, how are you? Good morning to you and the psychologist.
Morning.
Yes, you know, this is a very, 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 very touching topic to me. I was in a relationship and somebody that I have a child with. And way before I had a child with her, I've realized that she's a kind of a liar. And I thought somehow I could change, you know, I could help her, you know, change to always try to tell me the truth. I always encouraged her that we are a team. You need to, you know, you can lie to somebody else. Rather, let's lie to everybody else, your family and my family, and then tell each other the truth. And my child is 5 now, and I'm still struggling with the same thing, although I'm not together with her anymore. And I left her, and I went back because, you know, I loved her. And I've told her this many and many times before that she's now in a situation whereby she doesn't know the difference between lies and the truth. For an example, the recent one is that, I mean, I got a job through my sister. And she comes and lies to me and say she got retrenched, and when there was no such a thing. And she even forgot that the person who got her job, it's my family, you know.
So what has this done to your relationship, your sense of trust?
Yes. I don't trust her. Whatever she says, I don't trust her. Whatever, even if, you know, if she had to say my child is sick, I'll have to drive and go and check on my child to see that the child is sick.
Okay. Leshlogo, I'm going to put you on hold because we've got to take a break. It's a complicated case. I'll ask Hayden to reflect on it in a little bit.
702 and Cape Talk. Family matters.
Okay, we still have Leshlogo on the line. What comes off you as you hear his story about his relationship with his partner?
Quite a lot, yeah. I mean, I can hear even in your tone of voice how much damage it's done. You almost sound actually a bit defeated.
Yeah.
Like worn down.
Yeah, no, I am.
And I fully understand that, the powerlessness and the frustration behind it. But if I can, I'm aware perhaps we should linger there for a while, but I want to, for the purposes of this context, just rush the process a bit and zoom out and look at it a bit clinically. If we look at it, I hear what you're saying. You continue to see evidence that what this ex-partner of yours is saying is deceit. I hear the concern for your child. On that level, it is true. There is the potential for damage to be done if the child is confused about what is occurring and what is not. There is the potential for a bit of a skewed picture to come. What I will say there, I know our knee-jerk instinct is to lash out against your ex and to try and fight back. But it is very unlikely that kind of behavior will change her behavior. It's more likely just to strengthen her need to avoid the anxiety, and there she will defend in the same manner, more of the same, if it is quite rigid. I will rather say it is to sit down your child at a stage and explain that sometimes people, even mommy, even you, sometimes people get a bit stuck in their life and they say some things because they are worried and they are scared. It's not necessarily the truth, and you don't always have to worry about it. But teach her a little bit to look behind. It's a big ask for a child, but if you're giving her that kind of a message, you're equipping her as well to have the skills as she grows up to navigate through the world, that you're going to have this type of behavior in many different contexts in any event. Of course, it is to reassure her, and if the detail of the lies, that's very context specific, and that will differ dramatically depending on what is actually occurring. But I will say, on the level of your daughter, that is one of the elements to pitch. On the other levels, sorry, I'm moving very quickly. I'm almost not letting it have time to sink in, but let us quickly move there. If we look at your interaction and how you are sort of struggling involved in this, very challenging. Classically, once we have a split up in a partnership with a child involved, there's normally a bit of elements of a power struggle and conflict, yeah, and unfinished business. So a very big ask what I want to put forward to you. But in principle, as I've discussed now, one of the elements of lying or deception is to avoid unwanted consequences. The other one actually is how sometimes we express our needs. We may have a need, for example, for space. We may have a need for closeness. We may have a need to be understood. And some people sometimes will express it in a dishonest way. In that way, again, there is a bit of a catch-22 and the need is not fulfilled. But you might find that your ex is trying to express something. She says she's been fired. You might find she, for example, has a need for more support from your side. And she's trying to paint a dishonest picture that will corner you in a situation where you must now support. I'm just hypothesizing now. But let us say that is it. Behind that is a need for support. If you were, and it is a lot of work, but theoretically, if you were to have a safe, very, very open, accepting communication with her where she would be able to vulnerably express this, or if you were to be able to say to her, "I can see you're really struggling. Are you really looking for support here? Perhaps we can chat a bit." Mm. We cut through the function of the deception there, because ironically, what we don't understand, and this is a really powerful mechanism, by individuals being dishonest, they also elicit it. But with us, if we look for dishonesty and we persecute it, we actually elicit it. We create the platform that necessitates dishonesty. It doesn't necessitate, makes but sense. It loads the dice for an individual who's being dishonest to be stuck there. Mm.
All the best, Les Vlachanolo. Very complicated situation. Thank you for sharing with us.
You're serious. You know, thank you. The doctor really helped. But all I wanted to say at the end is that I've always come down and tried to go to her and try to say to her, You need help. Let me get you some help. And I've spoken to her mother, and her mother said, I must always encourage her that she needs help. Everybody knows that. But she doesn't. She denies it flat out.
If I can fine-tune there, I hear your compassion and how you are trying to support. But the act of saying you need help carries a degree of judgment which will place pressure.
Even if not intended.
Yeah, I will rather say just try, and if you can see what... Put on the glasses of what need is she trying to fulfill, and then you can perhaps check with her. You can request, you've lost your job. Are you wanting support? Yes, I'm wanting support. So we don't even necessarily need to mention that this...
I like that. I really like that. Yes. So we get out of the mode of saying, your behavior is problematic.
Yes.
Go to the doctor.
Yes.
And we rather ask the question, what is driving this behavior?
Indeed. Beautiful. Mm. Beautifully put.
Beulah, good morning to you.
Good morning, Eusebius, and good morning to your guest. You know, I'm still aching at the way I was deceived. You know, there was an ad in our local newspaper in the area where I live, looking for support for a little boy who had a rare form of cancer. Mm. And, you know, I belong to a group of women. I have stage 4 advanced breast cancer, metastatic breast cancer. And so we have a group, and, you know, we chat and we get together. And, of course, when I read this article, it just it touched my heart so deeply. Mm. And anyway, my husband and I immediately made a donation. Sorry that I'm getting emotional.
That's okay. Don't worry, Bella. That's okay.
You know, we immediately made a donation into the account that was given. And then I spoke to my friends in my group about it, and the one girl who's also got an incredibly good heart, she was having a birthday and told all her friends, no presents, just give me donations for this little boy. And I went along and told them the whole story. And anyway, between us, we collected, plus people in my security village, and a lot of pensioners who really couldn't afford it, gave money. Anyway, it's not a huge amount, but we raised 15,000. And I showed this woman, and she said, "Oh, just put it, don't put it in the." I said, "No, I can't get out. Very, very bad knees. Could you please come and collect the money?" So she did come. But all the stories told, the lies, anyway, the bottom line, how I discovered it was that she again started asking for money, but I started getting a very bad feeling about this woman. Very dodgy. In fact, when she came, her husband sat in the car but didn't come anywhere near our driveway. He parked near the neighbors and said, "Oh, you know, my husband's very proud. You know, he doesn't want to come in." And I thought, gee, if it was my job, I would be on my knees thanking these people, you know, when you're so desperate. But he was very cagey when we walked out. She said, "No, you don't have to walk out with me. You don't need to walk out with me." But I walked out with her, and the husband didn't look us in the eye. My husband was with me, didn't look, didn't make any contact, didn't say thank you. Anyway, to cut a long story short, eventually, as time went on, she kept phoning for more money, and she told me her child was so desperate. By Friday, they had to raise just another 3,000 because it was such a story. But I was scared. I thought, well, what if it's true and they need this money, you know? So I immediately got 3,000 rand together, and then I phoned her. She was at the hospital. She said, "The little boy is sleeping, and, you know, blah, 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 big story." And I then phoned the hospital, and I asked to be put through to that ward. And the sister said, "No, no, he just had a quick procedure. He was in and out this morning," because she said he had all these tumors cut out of his jaw, and he was in, you know, ICU. Well, that turned out to be an absolute lie. She even lied about her doctors in cahoots with to treat the medical aid. I was so angry. Anyway, I got hold of her and I told her, "You know, you've made this so difficult for other children who are really in need to get help with your, you know, because of all your lies." Anyway, she now doesn't accept my phone calls.
Can I ask you this? You were a little bit teary when you were telling the story about 2 minutes ago.
Yes.
Tell us how your commitment to being an empathetic citizen, how that has now been completely affected by realizing that this is one massive scam. What has it done to you?
You know, Eusebius, this is not the first time that I've been scammed.
Okay.
My husband's also been scammed before. It's not the first time. And I always believe in human nature. I trust people. And I'm so afraid.
That makes complete sense, Hayden. I mean, here you have two human beings with a beautiful moral compass. If we had more of that kind of moral compass in our country, we'd achieve a hell of a lot more. But now you begin, what do you do? What do I start just, you know, not trusting my judgment? Do I cut back on my instinct to do good?
Very difficult one. Okay, if I can come in there first, I can hear the pain, and I can actually hear how deep it ripples through, pulling on a particular wound that you sit with, Beulah, because it is actually personal and been exploited. And it is so far, I can hear from your frame of reference of what you see human beings doing, that you, in your most vulnerable time, they would not take advantage of that. And I want to confirm, if I can, that reality by saying many human beings function like that, but some do not. And what I hear here from what you're describing, we see a very cruel, very self-serving behavior with absolutely no consideration for the damage being done. Very exploitative in nature, very selfish. That is the picture that you are painting of this behavior from these people. If we move again to the level of deception, here we have a lot of deception. As I've explained, we also have manipulation that I previously wanted to separate. If we even look at that clinically, we have actually a use of emotional pain within an individual to alter their behavior. There we have the active manipulation. Within it, we have deceptive pictures. So deception plays into it. And if we pull back to the function just alone of deception to sort of further or highlight my rant, we have the need for financial gain being fulfilled through deception. So that is what is attempting to be done here. Done in a very selfish way, very unempathic, very cruel, very, very cruel way. But still the process and the function of the deception remains. We even hear in this deeply cruel individuals, we actually hear the anxiety, the rush to get out of the house when taking.
So there's no easy answer to this question, because I'm sure it will take coaching, good conversations with your BFF, or you make an appointment with a clinical psychologist like Aiden. But her values define us, right? Values define who we are. Our principles and values define who we are as people. An important part of her values seem to be doing good so far as I can, as Beulah from Linhood. How do you improve your ability to detect BS without undermining a core part of your own identity?
This is a difficult one, and it really is context specific. If I hear, though, what Beulah is saying, we have an individual that has a, it sounds as though she has a very deep compassion and care for other human beings.
Which we want to honor and hold on to.
Indeed. We have also a need to, my hypothesis, a need to rescue. Probably in her family system, she really takes care of others and rescues them when they are in trouble. In that regard, I will say perhaps in her family and close friends and things, Beulah, for you, it perhaps serves you very well and creates a role for you in deep meaning and fulfillment. And I hear the need to even extend it outside to further elements of your life. And I will say that is possible. But when doing that, perhaps apply just a degree of caution. If there is an individual looking for a donation, if you feel the sensation that they are trying desperately to make you feel sorry for them, if they are talking in a way that is, you must feel the impact of, oh my gosh, I feel so sorry for you, and they keep trying to elicit that sympathy over and over and over. Oh, it's so desperate. It's just nothing more can be done. Oh my gosh, please, please, please. If you feel that impact, I will say allow a flag to go up. That is the cornerstone of manipulation, that feeling. And perhaps instead of drawing conclusions yourself, I will say seek a bit more outside assistance from individuals. Share a bit the story with them, people that you trust that are a bit more skeptical of other individuals, and maybe receive their opinion before putting in so much. Even if you choose to put in, perhaps draw a boundary for yourself. I am willing to assist with 10,000, 15,000, and no more. If in a month they return, that is unfortunately as much assistance as I can give.
Absolutely. 14 minutes before noon, give us a call, 011-883-0702. And in Cape Town, 021-446-0567. We're unraveling the psychology of deceit, what it does to the people that you are deceiving. And also from the other side, how to perhaps respond more productively to the deceiver, by not judging and moralizing, although that's sometimes appropriate, but perhaps asking yourself, what need or want are they trying to fulfill through the action of the deceit? Beautiful conversation. We're going to take more of your calls on the other side of this.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
11 minutes before noon, and we're having a lovely conversation here about the psychology of deceit. And let's see how many more of your calls we can squeeze in the 10 minutes we have left with Hayden. Nana, good morning.
Morning, Eusebius and your guest. I just want to link this with the Katavelos issue. I have so much compassion for people like him because they've been lied to all their lives. Now, what happens, that's my understanding, is that when they discover the truth now, when the truth comes out that there's nobody who's any more superior than the other, they tend to vent their anger at the people whom they were told were inferior to them. Now, I just want the dear doctor to contextualize that, because that person looks like he has a mental disorder. He looks like he is crazy. I mean, look at this man. He went to an expensive holiday in Greece, and he took those K people with him in his mind. So in my mind, I'm like, this person is really not a free person. He has been lied to since he was a child. Now he has to deal with the reality of the fact that all human beings are the same. Can doctor say something about that?
Look, we're gonna do a whole show on the psychology of racism. So Hayden will think about it. I've got my own views, having written on racism, and him and I will structure a psychology conversation around racism. Maybe the next time he comes on in a month or two. I want to ask a more general question, Joe, flowing out of Nana, not that particular example.
Okay.
You obviously have a wide range of interests in terms of human behavior.
Indeed.
Should we be talking about deceit in psychological terms? I mean, clearly we have and we should, but what I mean is, I also don't want people who are as deceitful as the one who was scamming Bueller to get away with being able to have their bad moral behavior pathologized.
Well, yes, it functions on many different logical levels. And I will say, rather the deceit is not to pathologize it. It is, deceit is really a part of normal human functioning. It's a destructive part. It is the element of manipulation, which ironically is also part of normal functioning. But it is the moral choice of when to do it and the cruelty behind the way that that particular case was exploitative. Here I mean, if Bueller wishes, she will shift it to a different logical level and involve the law or things like this, which is a very different view on human behavior. There is a connection between psychology and the law, of course. So there are many different layers that one looks at. I must say, classically, for the purposes of this context and this show and the Family Matters, what I would actually like to paint for the listeners is a picture that, A, there is a function for deceit, and if we look behind the veil, it is not evil. It is a matter, classically, of trying to avoid consequences. Obviously, contextually, things can be morally very deeply painful. Or it's a matter of expressing needs. If we keep that golden thread in line, it can actually empower a little bit the one being deceived. Because if we, theoretically, if we create absolute safety and acceptance, the function is gone. And your partner will not need to. I often see partners will come for therapeutic assistance, and they will state at the outset, you know, I need one thing in a relationship, honesty, and I told him that when I met him. I told him, if you lie to me, it's done. That verbal communication given right there to him literally increased the chances that he will lie. And then, of course, they will say, my last partner lied. So did the one before. So did the one before. And now I've caught him lying. I want to say, yeah, you will catch the next one lying, and the next one lying, and the next one lying. If you keep doing that for the rest of your life, you will have liars. Even if that liar never lied before, he will lie now.
I hear you. Leon, good morning.
Hi, good morning, guys. Just one simple question. What's the difference between lying and talking nonsense? You get people who actually blow a story completely out of proportion to the point where you actually know, now you're busy talking nonsense. You know, what is the difference? Because, as a matter of fact, they start believing themselves of the lies that they're telling. Can it be classified as almost the same or not?
Have you experienced that?
Oh, I've got a couple of family members who actually... I just want to walk around, turn around, and feel like giving out clubs, but of course you can't do that. Because I've got a very analytical mind.
I love your question, Leon, because the older I get, the more I am fascinated by the role of play in human relationships rather than having these black and white judgment calls that you might make as an undergraduate student, right? So if you have that who's always hunting on about boot, you should have seen how massive this thing is that I caught in 1973.
Indeed.
That would be what I alluded to earlier as presumably a white lie. We're all sometimes prone to exaggeration, right? That's not the behavior we are trying to put the spotlight on today. Or how do we delineate this stuff?
It can fall under the same umbrella. Okay. I like the way Leon has put it, very entertaining. But in a sense, obviously the terms he's using is not clinical, so let us bring it back. But if we look at it like that, essentially he's actually describing a situation where an individual is expressing a need. They are probably trying to impress. They are probably trying to shock or you know, appear important. And whatever the truth of the situation is, let us go with this. For them, they probably are worried that it will be insufficient to have the receiving end feel so much awe that they will give them the confirmation they are looking for. So in that sense, they are embellishing the story in a deceitful, if we can term it that, manner. But it, again, is an attempt to fulfill a need. Ironically and sadly, they classically will not have the need fulfilled because, A, they know it is not true. So even if the receiving end says, wow, that fish is so huge, you're the best fisherman I've ever seen, they know they're not. So yeah. Right now, their need for to be confirmed actually isn't fulfilled.
And at the point at which your nephew calls into a radio station to say, what do I do with my uncle that's talking BS?
Indeed.
Then the need has not been fulfilled.
Indeed.
Any sense of respect, indeed, having adventure associated with him, all of those things actually haven't been achieved.
Indeed. And ironically, either he will be called out and then he will be embarrassed and probably lie more because of the anxiety. Yeah. Or if it is believed, he will probably, what we find classically, is the behavior continues because the need is not fulfilled. Sure. So, and it even escalates. Next week, there was a whale shark.
Angela, good morning to you.
Morning, Eusebius. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
That's good. So just very briefly, I do some work for corporate clients where I train sort of their call center agents and that type of thing in detecting deception.
Mm.
And what I want to just mention on that, I'm not going to go through all of it, besides the fact that it is actually very difficult for someone with a well-developed conscience to lie. It's not something that comes easily to our brain.
Indeed.
You know, our brain doesn't like that type of thing. It makes it hard work. So we do give off clues, you know, that we are being deceptive. But for the lady, I think her name was Beulah, that called in earlier, and I think, you know, that really breaks my heart. I think the message I want to give there is that we tend to ignore our gut, our intuition, and I think it's the biggest mistake we make. Intuition is regarded by many people as a funny, you know, a voodoo, witchcraft, whatever it is, and it's not. It's actually a sense, you know, that we were given to be able to survive. I mean, a feeling where you walk into a place and it's dangerous,
yeah,
or, you know, where you feel someone is looking at you, that type of thing. It was,
yeah,
it was something that was, yeah, given to us to be able to pick up when there's something wrong. And I think people should really pay attention to their gut feeling.
Yeah. Stunning point. And I'm going to come back to that in a future show, even if it's just a talking point between you and me and the rest of our listeners, Angela. You're right. There's a lot of, if you talk about things like gut and gut feeling with a sense of mysticism, you might feel like you're doing something unscientific. But if you deconstruct the incredible experiential knowledge that may go into a judgment on the spot, then it looks a little bit more rational. In 30 seconds, what are your final thoughts, Hayden?
Yeah, well, I will say my final thoughts. I mean, I agree with the last caller. Absolutely, there is a discomfort when it comes to deception. That discomfort, if we strain it back a bit clinically, is that we're aware that we are putting forward something that has the risk of being shown up as inaccurate, and we're doing it knowingly. So there comes in the anxiety. With the subjective experience, there's, of course, telltale signs. Detection of deception plays along elements of emotion, but also linguistically. But that aside, I will say, instead of actively judging deception, let us try and create platforms in our lives that pushes away the function of deception, that allows our partners, people we care about, and those around us to be so accepted and understood that the requirement and the function of deception fades away.
Stunning. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
This one's for the active citizens who went further than having a dream for a better world. The ones who didn't ask who would do it, but said, I will do it.
Amazing people doing extraordinary things.
Your hard work and dedication brought a smile to someone's face, opened minds, set hope alive. You changed someone's life. You are someone's hero. And